Welcome to this workshop. We're very honoured to have Professor Mano Pitarco all the way from Italy to present on this risk-related health and sickness insurance workshop. The way things will work is Mano will be obviously giving a lecture. We'll have a break at about an hour and a half or something like that. We'll have some tea and refreshments. I'm sure Mano will take questions as he goes, if you have any questions you want to ask. And otherwise, I'll hand it over to Mano.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, and thank you in particular for giving me the opportunity of exchanging some ideas about this topic, which is rather complex and to some extent, the expression health insurance may sound rather ambiguous because of meaningful differences between Europe, United States, Australia, Asia, etc. So, first I would like to introduce the topic discussing about the possible meaning of this expression. The number of slides is rather huge. You see 152, which is almost terrible in 3 hours and a net timing which is clearly less than 3 hours, including the break. But as regards the topics, I will discuss the need for health-related insurance covers, then the products in the area of health insurance, just to make clear what could be the meaning of health insurance, sickness insurance, disability insurance, and so on. Then some ideas about the actuarial structure of sickness insurance. And then this is the background, the basic parts. 4, 5, and 6 are the more advanced chapters in which I'll try to introduce something more particular, maybe more interesting, but also more complex and with some mathematical structure, rather complex. So I will try to exhaust this argument here, number 4, indexation mechanisms, and then I will just introduce point 5 and point 6, some models for an individual experience rating, so for adjusting the premium according to individual experience, and finally some ideas about the impact of the aggregate longevity risk in lifelong covers. Lifelong, I mean health insurance covering the whole life of the individual. As also Mike said, questions are welcome at any point, so comments as you like. There is no particular question point, so if you need some details or ask and good question are welcome. And also not good question, maybe. Now, the good question, as I said, are the questions for which there is no answer. So the best question is without answer, but also average questions are welcome, of course. Very well. So we can think two individual flows in these terms, considering as inflows the income, wage, salary, the pension, plus possible life annuities, and as outflows, health-related costs. Meaning for health-related costs, medical expenses, expenses related to long-term care, I mean senescence and disability for the elderly, and loss of income because of disability, caused either by sickness or by accident. So we can imagine that the behavior over ages of the expected costs is increasing, and actually many statistical experience show this. For each individual, we have an increasing expected cost as time passes. Here I denote by X maybe the age entering an activity, maybe 20 or 30 years. N is here the time of retirement. So this is the activity period, and after time, and we have the retirement period. These are expected costs, but clearly there is a variability range, a likely variability range. Cost may be higher than expected or may be lower than expected. How to cover? We could think, at least in principle, to what we call natural premiums. Also here the terminology is not is a bit ambiguous. Someone called risk premium. In any case, a natural premium or risk premium can be used as synonym each other, meaning that there is a premium related to the expected cost of each year. So natural premiums usually are a bit higher. Why? Because there is a safety loading, in the sense that the insurance company includes in the premium safety more to face riskiness, and as well, if claims are as expected, to have a profit margin. So what about the income profile? We can imagine an increasing, we hope at least, an increasing income profile during the activity period, and a more or less flat profile after retirement and for the retirement period. Of course, the duration is unknown, corresponds to the actual duration of life. So how to arrange the premium payments? Clearly, natural premiums are not applicable, because here may be very, very high, extremely high, because the expected costs actually are very high. So we have to think to some alternative arrangements to define the premiums. A simple idea is this one: whole life level premiums. Clearly, if we think to a lifelong insurance cover, I mean lasting the whole life, we could think in principle to a flat premium profile, so whole life level premiums. With an interesting aspect, which is this one, clearly premiums are much lower than the expected cost for the elderly, but can be huge here, can be very, very high compared to the income in the first year, and also compared to the expected cost. So one could wonder, why should I pay such a high amount if the expected cost in the first year is low? Here we mean a person age 25, 30, or something like this. So temporary life premiums. Temporary life premiums are also interesting, because here we are not sure one will have the income enough to pay. So we can shorten, but here we have even a better situation, because there is no premium payment, but here we have even a worse situation, because premium gets higher than in the former case. So this can be an interesting arrangement in principle, but in practice can be rather critical. Another alternative, temporary stepwise level premiums, which mean arranging the premiums with a low amount when the wage is rather low, then increasing, and here top level, high level of premiums when the salary and the wage is higher. But in any case, we complete the funding of the insurance, or the insurance costs for the whole life, we complete in N years. So as long as there is an income coming from salary, from wage. What we have to keep in mind is that in any case, when we make some leveling, both in the case of lifelong leveling and a fortiori in the case of a shorter leveling, I mean restricted to, for example, the period of activity, we need a reserving process. So a reserve arises because we have to compare the level premium to the natural premium. And so we have an excess initially, and then two low premiums compared to the expected cost, so that reserving is needed. And here, a higher reserving is needed because premium stops well before the retirement age and well before the higher need for costs. So we can conclude singling out the two aims of a health insurance product. First, replace random costs with deterministic costs. I mean insurance premium, random costs for health, deterministic costs, the insurance premiums, whatever the arrangement. I mean natural premium or level premium, shorter or longer. So risk coverage, and this is the typical purpose of insurance, of course. But also, second point, limit the consequences of the time mismatching. The time mismatching between income, which is higher before retirement, and health costs, which are much higher after retirement at the very old ages. So that's we have not only the risk coverage, but also the pre-funding. So a financing of the costs in advance with respect to the time where the costs will be paid and reimbursed by the insurance company. So clearly the pre-funding is limited to long-term products in particular, because if we think to a one-year health insurance cover, there is no particular problem in pre-funding. So long-term products generate the pre-funding, and in particular lifelong products. Risks. There are many risks involved here. Clearly, in particular, risks regards the number of claims, the severity of claims, but also in the risks inherent in the random lifetime, so generated by the uncertainty in random lifetime. So assuming that the person is alive at retirement, but clearly, how long? How long will be the expected costs paid and the premiums? Here we have the income profile, here we have the expected costs. What about the randomness? We know that we can assess the randomness using, in particular, the probability distribution of the random lifetime. So this curve here represents the PDF, the probability density function, or in discrete terms, if you want, the number of people dying at the various ages. You know that there is a point in which the probability of dying for a generation reaches its maximum, and this is called the Lexis point. Is the age here, which currently is between 80, 85, 86, more or less, in many, many countries, at least in Western countries. So we have a maximum probability of dying here, but we have also probability of dying at older ages, and of course probability of dying at ages smaller than the Lexis point. What about the shape? What about the shape of this curve? Here you see the pictures representing Italian table. SIM is an acronym to denote Statistica Italiana Maschi, Statistics Italy Males, Italian Males, in various years from 1881 to 2002. The reliability of the first table, 1881, is not so high because the institute ISTAT didn't exist in 1881, so the table is completely reconstructed, but we can also disregard the first table and look simply at the table from, let's say, 1931 to the most recent available. What you see here is the dynamics of the lifetime, the dynamics of the distribution of the lifetime. In particular, in the oldest curves, you see a huge infant mortality, extremely high here. You can see also a rather important mortality at young ages, mainly due to accidents, and a mortality which reaches a maximum at high ages, for example here at 70, now at 84, 85, more or less. So what you can see from this graph is that the curve of the number of deaths has a shape which changes really throughout time. In particular, two aspects are rather important. You see that here, the peak, you see the oldest one, okay, the peak is rather low, which means that there is an important dispersion. So the uncertainty in the duration of life is rather high. Here, the concentration is much more strong, much more important, which means that the duration of life has a less dispersion. But at the same time, you see that here the peak is 70 and here is 80, 85, 84. So we have the two the two effects. The first one is called rectangularization, because if we look at the shape of the survival curve, we see that the survival curve, the number of people alive in a cohort, tends to assume a more and more rectangular shape. So a higher and higher concentration, which corresponds to a peak, which is higher and higher. And the other phenomenon is the so-called expansion, in the sense that the curves move towards the right-hand side. So this means an important uncertainty in the future distribution of lifetime. So we have indeed difficulties which are originated in particular by the coexistence of random fluctuation of numbers of survivors around expected values. I mean, the possibility, of course, that one person dies sooner or later, which is called individual longevity risk. But much more critical, the systematic deviation of numbers of survivors from expected value, in the sense that we project future mortality, we can construct projected tables, but clearly the reality may be different. And this is the aggregate risk, because this means that, in particular, all people can live more than expected. So more than what we expect, more than the average calculated with projected life tables. And this is called aggregate longevity risk. From a classical insurance point of view, we say that this risk can be diversified inside the usual insurance reinsurance process, in the sense that the larger the number of people who constitute the pool, the less important is in relative terms this risk. So a larger pool is better than a smaller pool, which means, in terms, that if we are not able to increase the size of our portfolio, we can move the risk to a reinsurer, to a reinsurance company, whose portfolio will be larger and, in this sense, better diversified. This risk here cannot be diversified inside the insurance reinsurance process, because the larger is the pool, the worse can be the situation, in the sense that if we make some mistake in the forecast, it's better to have 100 policies than 1,000 policies or 1 million policies. It's better to be on the wrong side for a small number of policies than for a huge number of policies. So the diversification cannot be inside the traditional insurance or reinsurance process. There are other possibilities. This is not not the case to mention these possibilities, something like the so-called alternative risk transfer, the transfer to capital markets via longevity bonds and so on. But what is important to keep in mind is that when we deal with health insurance cover lifelong, which are lifelong, we have also these type of risks beyond the usual risks in health insurance, which are connected to the number of claims, to the severity, etc. This is a typical biometric risk, in particular the aggregate longevity risk. So what about the type of products in the area of health insurance? The term health insurance in many countries, and in particular in the U.S., in the United States, this expression is used to denote a very large set of insurance products which provide benefits in the case of need arising from accident or illness, either accident or illness. And these need, these accident or illness lead to a loss of income, partial or total, permanent or non-permanent, and possibly to expenses related to hospitalization, to medical surgery, expenses to nursery, and so on. So we have both the loss of income and the expenses. So the area, health insurance belongs to the so-called area of insurances of the person, in which we have life insurance in a very strict sense, in which benefits are due depending on death and survival only, which means only on the insured's lifetime, depend on the insured's lifetime only, and the health status is completely disregarded. So no matter about ability or disability or existence of consequences of an accident, an illness, and so on. Then health insurance, in which benefits are due depending on the health status and the relevant economic consequences, and depending on the lifetime as well, in the sense that this is still a component of health insurance. Lifetime is the only component in life insurance, but is a component as well in health insurance. Other insurances of the person, in which benefits are due depending on other type of events, like a marriage, birth of a child, educational, professional training of children, etc. Health insurance, understood in a very broad sense, usually are shared by life and non-life insurer, by life and non-life branches. But I do not enter here into details because this is typically connected to national legislation and regulation, with also different tax consequences. But I want to remain on a neutral field, so I do not enter into particular details as regards the location of the insurance product. Here you find just a graph to mean that non-life depend on countries. We may have other classifications. I think that in Germany, disability insurance constitutes a separate branch, which is neither life nor non-life. Here we have insurances of the person. Here we have what is called the protection. The term protection, I don't know, to be honest, in Australia, but in Europe now is used to mean health insurance as well as term insurance. I mean insurance providing benefit just in case of death. I mean no accumulation product. So clearly an endowment is here, but it's not here, because an endowment insurance tends to constitute an amount at maturity. And finally, here you have the health insurance. What type of products in health insurance meant in a very broad sense? We have different types of benefits first. So reimbursement benefits, which meet totally or partially according to policy conditions. Health costs, for example, medical expenses. This is the typical benefit which consists in a reimbursement of expenses. A forfeiture allowance, which means that the amount is stated at policy issue, so it's not related, it's not a function of an expense. This simply provides an income when the insured is prevented, because of sickness or injury, from working, and we can have annuity or lump sum. Service benefits, these are monetary benefits, this is a service benefit, means care service, for example, hospital, or what are in the United States, the continuing care retirement communities, which clearly imply some agreements between the insurance company and the care provider or the hospital, etc. So as regards the products, in health insurance, in a broad sense, we can include accident insurance, sickness insurance, health benefits as riders or supplementary benefits riders to a basic life insurance cover. For example, the premium waiver in case of disability in an endowment insurance or in a term insurance, the critical illness or dread disease insurance, which covers particular cases in which the illness has a very high severity, disability annuities, which are also called, if related to the working inability, are also called income protection. Income protection is the name typically used in the United States, but also is the translation in maybe also in Australia. You call income protection, okay. It's very nice to see when there is some agreement between the use of different terms. This had, in UK in particular, but in many European countries, the terrible name of permanent health insurance. And many people didn't understand the meaning of PHI, permanent health insurance. There was some misunderstanding What is permanent? It's just paid in case of permanent disability, not at all, because it's permanent health, not permanent insurance. So what is the meaning? No, completely wrong the reading, because it is permanent health insurance, where permanent means that the contract cannot be broken by the insurance company because of a huge number of sickness or accident or disabilities. So also in UK they changed the name and now they call also income protection or something like this. Finally, long-term care insurance, which is the insurance, is very similar in actuarial terms to disability annuities, but is paid not because of working incapacity, but because of incapacity of performing the usual activities of daily life. So because of partial inability or total inability due usually to senescent, a non-particular illness. Now, in the following, we see the products listed in this section. We will focus on what here is called sickness insurance. Now the actuarial structure. There are important differences according to the duration of the cover. 1 year covers. Clearly the problems I described when introducing are clearly related to multi-year covers, which have a higher quality, much more interesting for the clients, because 1 year cover in case of too many accidents or too many illnesses in 1 year, the insurance company can say, no, I do not want to insure again. So 1 year cover exposes the insured to the risk of being uncovered after an important number of sicknesses or accidents. So this clearly are much more important. But the actuarial problems we see are completely different, moving from 1 year covers to multi-year. And then point four, from the basic model to more general models. Here we have the three issues I mentioned while introducing. So let's say, to some extent, a dynamic perspective in sickness insurance. So life insurance aspects in health insurance mainly concern indeed medium and long-term contracts and possible lifelong contracts. And this concerns disability annuities, long-term care insurance, and some types of sickness insurance products, provided that this offer a lifelong or at least a longer cover. Survivor modeling among the life insurance aspects, benefits are due in case of life. And this is just an important aspect when pricing a life insurance product, because benefits are in case of life. So to be on the safe side, to be prudential, survivor probability should not be underestimated. So the idea, when we have to choose a mortality table, we have not to choose a mortality table, an old mortality table, or with a high probability of dying, or too much high probability, because this provides benefit in case of sickness and life as well, of course. So we need to be on the safe side to, if possible, overestimate the survivor probability. Exactly the same then in life annuities, for example. In life annuities, I mean in life insurance or in pensions. There are many financial issues, in particular the asset accumulation backing the technical reserve and the return to policyholders. These are aspects of life insurance which are present in long-term or lifelong sickness insurance. There are many non-life insurance aspects, clearly the claim frequency, which concern all types of covers, and here the problems basically are the availability of data. Data are usually scanty and not necessarily of the proper formats, the good formats, and the experience monitoring and the experience rating, if possible, to introduce this type of rating. Then the claim size, so claim frequency on one side and claim size on the other side, which concerns insurance covers providing reimbursement, I mean when the amount of the payment is random, because otherwise if it's forfeiture allowance, clearly there is this problem, claim frequency, but not this one, claim size, in the sense that the amount of claim is deterministic. As regards expenses, there is a need for a certain and assessed the claims, so these are expenses directly connected to claims, and more, it's needed to check the health status in case of non-necessarily permanent disability, which means a continuous monitoring of the ability of the possible recovery of the insured. So here you have a more or less confusing graph, but in any case you see what are the most important life insurance and non-life insurance aspects. For example, if you look here, duration and premium arrangement, 1 year, in case of 1 year, you have just non-life insurance features like claim frequency, claim severity, and assessment and assessment of claims, whereas if you have any years cover, but not with natural premiums, because in the case of natural premiums, each premium or risk premiums, each premium covers exactly the expected cost in that year, but in case of level premiums, I mean premiums leveled for a limited period or lifelong, we have the mathematical reserve, and then this is typically a life insurance feature in the sense that we need a life table, we need an interest rate for discounting, possibly we have indexing problems in the sense that maybe we like to link the benefit to some index, maybe inflation or generic inflation or specific inflation in the as regards the medical costs. So just a bit of formula to define the terminology and some basic issues. Now I refer to medical expense reimbursement or to forfeiture daily allowance for hospitalization, but this does not mean hospital expenses, but simply a daily allowance for the period in which the person is in hospital because of illness or accident, or a forfeiture daily allowance for short-term disability. In practice, this number two and number three provide exactly the same type of benefits, but clearly statistical basis are different because in this case, the benefit is provided in case of hospitalization. In this case, it is provided in the case of short-term disability, not necessarily implying a stay in hospital. So for a person, so this approach is individual, clearly we refer to a single insured, we have a random number of claims for the generic insured, and capital YJ is the payments, the random payment for the J claim, so that the total annual payment to the generic insured is a random amount, which is zero clearly in case of no claims, and is the sum of the random amounts in case of one or more claims. Now we have to choose a premium calculation principle, which usually is the equivalence principle, which means that we choose as the premium, the single premium, the net premium, in the sense that expenses are not included here, the expected value of the total amount. So we have to calculate this expected value. Or approximately, if you want to approximately take into account the timing of payments, we can discount more or less 1/2 year, so we can allow for the assumption that the payment is on average at the midpoint of the year. Clearly, I is the interest rate. What about the hypothesis here? According to these hypotheses, we found this result, which is clearly the most common result used in health insurance, but also in non-life insurance in general, according to which the expected value of the payment is factorized into the expected value of the generic payment times the expected number of payments. So this formula is, suppose everyone has seen this formula, is extremely common in non-life insurance, but we have to keep in mind what are the underlying assumptions. This means that we assume that for what that whatever the number of claims in 1 year, we have stochastic independence and identical probability distribution for all the random variables. And more, the stochastic independence of the number and the amounts. This should be not disregarded, or at least we have to keep in mind and to possibly arrange for some correction, because the alternative should be to express correlations between the variables, and data sure are not enough rich to provide a good estimation of correlation or some joint probability distribution, etc. But here you can see a case which is rather critical. What is the meaning of this? The meaning of this is that whatever the outcome of the first variable, you do not change your opinion, your probability distribution as regards the other variables. This is the meaning of independence. You have an information about one outcome, and you completely disregard this information, you are not interested in this information, when you assign the probability distribution to the other variables. If you think, for example, daily allowance for hospitalization, and you think to an extreme case in which you see that the first claim is 300 days in 1 year, 300 days, clearly in 1 year, if I remember, there remain 65 days. So that the probability distribution for the other variables cannot assign an outcome like 100 days here, 200 days here, etc. In total, at most, 65. This is the meaning of relation, of course. This is a constraint. If the first claim is 300 days, all the other claims, if there are claims, must be at most 65 days in a year. Clearly, the probability of these events is very small, so the problem is not so big thanks to the very small probability. And for this reason, these assumptions are accepted, but to some extent are not realistic assumptions, are not reasonable assumptions. The problem is that the alternative is extremely complex, and so we assume this one, and we go on assuming this assumption. Okay? If you have a question, I repeat, ask whenever and whatever you want. Statistical estimation, here the problem is extremely simplified. The problem clearly is to estimate these two quantities. So we are assuming analogous risk in portfolio in terms of amount and exposure time. Clearly the exposure times can be different in the sense that one risk is exposed for just 6 months, another for 8 months, depending on the time of entering the portfolio. But assuming clearly one can have a different maximum amount, let's say 1,000, 10,000, etc. But assuming a perfect homogeneity, and if we say R is the number of insured risk, M the number of claims, and these are the amounts paid, we can calculate the average amount per claim, so what in that year has been paid on average for each claim. And then the average number of claims per policy, which is also called the claim frequency index. This is the number of claims, this is the number of insured risk, so maybe 8%, 10%, usually a number lower than one, of course. So we use this to estimate the expected number of claims and the expected amount respectively, so that the premium can be calculated in this way. So for a portfolio of forfeited daily allowance, we have the length of claims, no longer the amounts, but the amounts are defined by the daily amount times the length of claim, so that we have the average length of claim, this one, and the average clearly, exactly as before, previously, the average number of claims per policy. And so we can estimate in the same way the two quantities. The premium now is D, where D is the daily allowance, the expected number of days per claim, the frequency, and then discounting 1 year. And this is called the morbidity coefficient, which is the average length of claim per policy. So this is average length of claim, per claim, sorry, whereas this is the average length of claim per policy. So clearly a much more realistic setting should allow for the amount of exposure to risk, the exposure time within one observation year, etc. What regards risk factors? We should split the population into risk classes according to the values assumed by risk factors. Maybe objective or subjective. These are the physical characteristics of the insured, like the age, the gender, the health records, I mean the former health story, the occupation, more or less risky. Or subjective risk factors, the personal attitude towards health, which in turn determines the individual demand for medical treatments and consequently the individual application for insurance benefits. As regards the incidence of age, here you have other Italian data. These are national data. That is, as I said previously, the National Institute for Statistics. And you see data in the range between 15 and 70, in practice, 69, 70. These are ages at the beginning of each year. And you more or less find that these are increasing apart from from young and very young ages. The average is 10.48%. And we will keep in mind this number because it suggests a particular approach in calculating the premiums. So age as a risk factor. We take this as an important risk factor. In practice, we cannot disregard the effect of age, so that the probability distribution of the random amount S, the total amount paid, does depend on age. And in particular, we can shift from a generic Y-bar, phi and G-bar, to Y-X, X and G-X as a function of the age, so that the premiums are indexed with the age. So each premium for each age or each age group at least. Or maybe if we want to simplify, we can consider just the average number of claims as a function of the age, so we can remove the X here and just considering the frequency, which is a simplification clearly, but not so bad, can be accepted to some extent. We can assume a multiplicative model, which if you look here, it seems a rather stupid issue. But in reality, it's rather stupid. Why? Because clearly it's undetermined in the sense that we can define each factorization as we like. There are two terms, a product between two terms, and there is no particular rule for assigning one or the other. But what is important? Apart from that, we can choose, as we will do actually, quantities non-depending on age, we can choose as average on the insured population, and so we determine a rule in order to factorize. So in quantities which do not depend on age, this one, and in coefficients which express the age effect or aging coefficient. This simplifies a lot the calculation, in particular when defining an indexing mechanism. So the practical interest is also of a statistical nature in the sense that if we assume that the specific age effect does not change throughout time, remains the same, I mean the aging at 50 compared, the coefficient at 50 compared to the coefficient at 40, at 30, at 60, these coefficients in relative terms remain the same, very well, if we assume this, we can restrict the claim monitoring to the quantities which do not depend on age. So, and this can be observed over the whole portfolio, which means that we get, or we can hope to get, much more reliable estimates, because we do not observe particular age group, but the complete portfolio. So the statistical basis is much wider, much richer, and so the result in statistical terms should be much more reliable. This is an example. Here, indeed, the frequency, the constant part, the part which does not depend on age, is taken exactly the average. So to define a particular factorization, we take 10.48, and then we have an exponential which has been used to smooth these data. The data smoothed using an exponential function. And the same for the number of days, taking this, which is the average number of days of hospitalization over the whole portfolio, times an exponential function, so that we can derive these premiums. Okay, now we move to multi-year covers, in which we do find now the problems of the life insurance type. So start with the single premium, which is not a realistic one, not necessarily realistic, maybe, but usually we have to split the premium into a sequence, as we have seen before, of level premiums. But if you calculate a single premium, this is the structure. So we have to take this, which represent the expected cost, the risk premium or the natural premium, I mean the expected cost plus the safety loading at age X plus H, and then we have to discount the premiums at policy issue, so at age X. So this refers to an M-year policy. So each premium discounted in a financial sense and multiplied times the probability for a person age X of being alive at age X plus H. So this is our biometric discounting and financial discounting as well, so actuarial discounting. So what about the natural premiums? Usually, as we can see from the former table, these are increasing. These are increasing, so if we level the premiums, clearly we get an amount which is higher than the first level, the first natural premiums, and is smaller than the last natural premiums. Before doing this, we can express premiums in a multiplicative model. So this is the premium HX, I mean the risk premium or the natural premium HX. Then we can write the single premium according to this expression, in which we find a part which is independent of age, this one, and the part, a factor, this one, small pi XM, which does depend on age. And so this will be interesting for indexing, because we can simplify the problem of indexing the benefits. So the annual level premium payable for M years, we assume that the premium is payable for the whole policy duration, so there is no shortening of the premiums, which conversely is needed in some forms of disability insurance. Here there is no problem, because the risk premium are increasing. So risk premium are increasing, level premium is one, so we have that the so-called financing condition to the insurance company is fulfilled, is satisfied, in the sense that the insurance company is always in a debt position, receives money before spending the money to cover the costs. So there is no need to shorten the premium payment period, so we will find a reserve. We can actually prove that the level premium, this is the annual level premium payable for M years, is an arithmetic weighted average of the natural premium, so it's higher than the minimum of the risk premium, the natural premium, and smaller clearly with respect to the higher. So here, well, this is not so much interesting. It's simply what's the results of different age and different duration. Of course, you have a function, this one represented by the matrix, which is increasing given the duration as the age increases, of course, because we have considered the age as an important risk factor. And for each age, clearly the single premium is is increasing as the duration of policy increases. These are rather obvious consequences. Annual level premium, you find here, the same type of results are increasing according to duration or increasing according to age. What's interesting is to compare natural premiums and annual level premium. For example, this is the case of a 45 at entry with 15 years policy duration. And you find that there is a rather important excursion in the premiums, in the natural premiums. The levels are exchanged. These are the level premiums, the box here, and these are level premiums, and these are the natural premiums. You see that the natural premiums go from less than 120 to 200, which means almost twice, moving from 45 to 60. So 15 years from 45 to 60 implies a rather important increase in the natural premiums. So that the level premiums are much higher than the natural premiums at the beginning, and conversely much lower than the natural premium at the end of the story, at the end of the insurance cover. Here, what is also interesting to see the behavior of natural premiums for a given duration of 15 years, but for different ages at policy issue. You see here 35, 45, 55. In any case, natural premiums are increasing, but as you can immediately perceive, here the increase is more modest than here. Here we have a much higher increase between 55 and 70 than between 35 and 50. Why this? Because we have chosen an exponential shape. So the probability, the frequency of claim is increasing exponentially. So for a given duration, the higher is the starting point, clearly, the higher is the increment. The increment at young ages is rather modest, and then the increment is much higher if you move to higher ages. And you find here that indeed the slope here is much higher than here. So here the reserving process, will be more important, because the reserving process quantify exactly the excursion in the premium. If you have premiums which vary a lot, you must reserve more to have more money from which you have to take for paying the claims at old ages. How to define the reserve? This is the so-called aging reserve or senescent reserve. I do not know what name is used here in Australia, but it is a mathematical reserve in any case. In Europe it's rather common to call it aging reserve, but it is a mathematical reserve, so there is no particular reason, because one can say, yes, this is due because of aging. I agree, but also for a term insurance, of course, the reserve is defined because the probability of dying gets higher and higher as the age increases. So aging reserve or senescent reserve, a particular expression used to denote the mathematical reserve for sickness insurance. If I remember, this is also in German language, is Verälterung, no? Verälterung Reserve, which should mean, you know, something like aging, so the effect of aging of getting older and older, no, on the premiums. This is the definition, of course, which is the usual one. This is the single premium which should be paid age X plus T for the residual duration minus the actuarial value of the premiums for the residual duration. Clearly, initially zero, finally zero. There is no accumulation. And we can also find a recurrent relation, which is this one, expressing the technical balance in each year. Question? Dai. Oh, not a problem. What's the problem? Ask.
Yeah.
No, why? No, this. No, this is the level premium. This is the annual level premium. So this here is the actuarial value of future benefits, which you can write as the single premium, which should be paid entering the insurance product at age plus T, and with the residual duration of M minus T year. It's like a capital A in life insurance or something like this. This one is one premium defined this way, okay? Calculated, of course, at age X for the complete duration, and these M minus T is the number of future premiums. So you have to discount, that's the actuarial value or the expected present value of future level premiums. Is it okay? So, if there is a mistake, I don't see. Okay. So, what about the behavior? You can see here. Here there is no lifelong cover. Currently, we have working with some Belgian colleagues who are interested in a lifelong cover, some insurance companies interested in lifelong cover, and in lifelong covers the reserve is much more important, so with some different consequences as regards the financial aspects of the business of health insurance. Here you see that for 15 years, 35 the age, 50 the age, for 35 you have a rather modest behavior of the reserve, which is due to a not too strong increase in the natural premiums, I mean, you see here, okay? Whereas if you move to 50, a higher age, you have a higher increase in the natural premium, and so a more important need for reserving, because here you have, look here, no, 50, more or less like this situation here, you will have a level premium which is much higher than the initial premium and much lower than the final premiums, so that the need for reserving is higher here. Here, given the age at the entry, sorry, 35, you see the effect of duration. For a 5-year duration, almost nothing in practice. We have an extremely modest reserve, but a much more important reserve if you move to 20 years duration. And, of course, much more if you move to a lifelong duration. A lifelong duration can be critical because this means starting from 35, lifelong can mean something more than 60 years. Reaching 95 is not sure, of course, but the probability of reaching age 65 nowadays is not so small. The probability of reaching 85 is very high, which means half a century probable duration. And so the need for reserving is much, much, much higher. Okay, this is the basic model. Quarter to four, no? For the break. Yeah, okay. So this is a basic model which implies a static approach because we look at the situation which we presume remains the same for the whole policy duration, which can be 5 years or 30 years or 10 years, etc. Under both an individual perspective and a portfolio perspective, which means that we are disregarding some facts which can be important. For example, what about the number of claims experienced by each individual perspective? What about the inflation or the increased medical costs, the specific medical inflation, or the generic inflation as regards daily allowance, for example? So we can define different, we can generalize our model according to different ways, in particular allowing for some dynamic feature. Claim frequency and claim cost at the portfolio level, individual claim experience, longevity dynamics and related consequences, specifically in lifelong sickness covers. So these are the three directions we should try to move. So in the following chapter, we look simply at indexation mechanism, how to link the benefits or to the overall claim frequency or to the overall claim costs, in particular because of the presence of inflation. Then maybe I will just introduce this, as I mentioned at the beginning, otherwise we have to go throughout 152 slides, but to shorten, just to introduce the basic aspects of the adjustment of premiums according to some mechanism of individual experience rating, and finally the problem of longevity risk in lifelong covers, I mean the aspect determined by the uncertainty in future mortality trends, in which we could compare different premium arrangements, but as mentioned, I will just address some topics without going into details as regards formula and the numerical results. So, indexation mechanisms. For example, we can refer to medical reimbursement policies. We can have various type of changes at the portfolio level or even at population level. Why? Because the claim frequency type changes or the average cost per claim, for example, because of inflation, throughout the policy duration. What about the possible approaches? We can change policy conditions so that the actuarial value of future benefits keeps constant throughout time. I mean, we have a higher cost per claim, for example, because of inflation, so that we can reduce the maximum amount without changing the premium. So raise the deductible, if any, lower the maximum amount, and so the premium can remain unchanged. Or, conversely, we can allow for variation in actuarial values of benefits because of changing claim frequency and or changing average cost per claim, but then we need to introduce some indexing, some elements we have to relate the premiums and or the reserve to what have been changed, and this to keep the equivalence principle fulfilled. We have to keep in mind that we have calculated the single premium and level premiums as well according to the equivalence principle, according to a scenario we have described in terms of claim frequency, claim amounts, etc. Now the scenario has changed, so that to keep satisfied, fulfill the equivalence principle, we have to allow for the change in the actuarial value of benefits. And then we have to change the actuarial value of premiums or reserves. We have to adjust something. What can be more or less effective to see, to perceive what can be more or less effective is just the purpose of this part. We focus indeed on approach two. So allow for variation in actuarial value of benefits and then changing some policy elements, maybe premiums, maybe reserves. We refer, for example, to hospitalization benefits, and our interest is in keeping constant the purchasing power of the daily allowance. So initially it was 100 because of a general inflation must be 105, 110, because otherwise the purchasing power lost completely. So we have to index the benefits, and so we need to adopt the approach to, I mean, this one. So what about the adjustment model? This adjustment model is taken from the idea of participation mechanisms according to some European arrangements in life insurance. So the idea is rather simple. Start from this equation here. This is the equation which we have used to define the reserve.
Indeed, the reserve is equal the actuarial value of future benefit minus the actuarial value of future premiums. So we write in this way, and trivially we discover that these are the assets to cover this liability. This is the assets. You can read the reserve as the assets backing the reserve itself, plus this is the current assets you already have, and the insurance company already has, and this is the future assets, I mean the actuarial value of future premium. So the total assets must be equal to the total liability. In particular, we assume the multiplicative model, so to simplify this expression and to split it this into a part which does not depend on age and a factor which does depend on age and of residual duration, of course. Now we assume that changes only concern the factor capital K, whilst do not concern the specific effect of age. And this, I think, is perfectly in line with the idea that we are dealing with inflation. So the inflation is more or less the same for a young man or a young lady or an old lady or an old man, etc. So we have to look exactly at what changes do affect the factor capital K. And so we quantify this change in the sense that we move from capital K to capital K times 1 plus JK. What is this? This is a rate, 2%, for example. So we move from 100 to 102, which can express the effect of inflation, for example, specific, or in this case, the generic inflation. Clearly, this enters here. So enters here, and therefore we have to change here in order to keep the equivalence condition fulfilled. Example, medical expense may be this one. So we have this increase, but we said we deal with hospitalization benefit, which means that we have to increase the daily allowance. So instead of D, we have a higher amount, D times 1 plus J, capital K, to express the loss of power in practice of the daily allowance. So look at this formula. Here, this actuarial value changed because this is tangent. So we move from this to this one. We have to increase this actuarial value, which means capital K times 1.0203, or what is the inflation rate. So that's the new equivalence condition, is this one. No longer this, we just capital pi, but capital pi times 1 plus jk. So then we have to increase the other side. This is a typical structure, as we say in life insurance, liability driven, in the sense that the benefit is determined and the assets must cover the liability. Clearly not a unit linked like product, which is asset driven, because the liability in a unit linked clearly is determined by the value of assets. This is typically liability driven, as the conventional life insurance, the with bonus participating, etc. So this is the new equivalence condition. We have to increase this one. But in more general terms, so we can imagine that as we have two terms here, we can increase this with one rate and this one with another rate. Maybe if JV equals JP, clearly all the three rates will be equal. We have to increase 2% here, and it's okay if we increase 2% here and 2% here, of course, it's exactly the same. But maybe we can increase just 1% here, and who knows, 3%, 3.5, it's a problem of equilibrium, okay? Between the increment in the reserve and in the future premiums, which anyhow has to cover the increment in the liability in the future benefits. So JV and JP must fulfill this equation. So we can simplify writing in a simpler way just the equivalence condition on the increments. So disregarding the initial equivalence condition and just looking at the increments. So the increment in the reserve plus the increments in all future premiums, be careful because this means that all future premiums will be rising the same percentage. So if this 2%, this means that all future premiums will be higher, the 2% must be equal to the increment in the actuarial benefit. From this relation, we can find a rather interesting relation, which, and this in particular, this is simply a matter of deriving formula, but this helps in understanding the numerical results. What we find is that the increments in the future benefits must be, or better, these rates must be such that the increment in benefit is a weighted average of these two increments. Weighted average, you see here, VT, future value of premiums, value of future premiums. So this is the relation among the three adjustment rates. JK is the weighted arithmetic mean of this and this. Note that the weights do depend on the attained age and the residual duration, are not constant throughout time. Because this, the weight here is VG, which is increasing and then decreasing. The weight here is the actuarial value of future premiums, which is very small at the end of the story when there are still few premiums to be cashed, and is much higher at the beginning of the story when there are more premiums to be cashed. The problem is what is important of the reserve. In life insurance, in an endowment insurance, just to refer to an important example in participation mechanisms, you know that the reserve is increasing from zero to the benefit at maturity, so that the behavior is more or less linear in endowment insurance. So the importance of the reserve is increasing throughout time, whereas the importance of future premium is clearly decreasing because there are less and less premiums to be cashed. Here the behavior of the reserve is completely different, and the reserve is rather small compared to the benefit. So that the role of this rate will be not so important as it is in life insurance. Clearly, what is more common and interesting in practice is to apply this relation not just one point of time during the policy duration, but recursively every year, so that we will have an adjustment rate JK, JV, and JP at time T, possibly each year. Possibly every year an adjustment according to inflation. Okay, what is the practical aspect? In participating policies in life insurance, and why not, could be also here, the increase in the reserve could be financed via profit participation. So not paid by the policyholder, but paid as profit participation by the insurance company. Whereas an increase in premiums rate should be paid by the policyholder. Clearly, as JK is a weighted arithmetic mean, if JV is smaller than the increment in the benefits, we need an increment, a rate of increment clearly, of premiums higher than this one. Firstly, if the increment in premiums is smaller than the increment of benefits, we need an increment in the reserve which is higher than the increment in the benefits. So clearly, how much higher, how much smaller, this clearly depends on the relative amounts of future premium, reserve, etc. Question, remarks? I repeat your remark. Already disappointed, more or less disappointed. This is also a problem of terminology. As regards the meaning of participation, I don't know if it's clear because it's more or less a European language, continental European language. Clearly, when I refer to participation, profit participation, I refer to profits used by the insurance company and attributed to the policyholders, clearly not to the shareholders. So in life insurance, this is to increase the
technical provision, the mathematical reserve, and so to increase the benefit. Here it's exactly the same. Exactly the same. So profit participation means that the policyholders have advantage from profits obtained by the insurance company, maybe financial profit, maybe sickness profit, maybe mortality profit, I mean in general, so that something can be financed. In particular, can be financed the increase here, the increase in the reserve, so that this allows for increasing the actuarial value of the benefits, and so this, in turn, allows for keeping the benefits in line with inflation. Inflation or other causes of increase in the benefits. Another remark may concern the safety loading. I don't know if this term is clear to everybody or not. I mean, safety loading means an increase in premiums, so we can start from an ideal point of view, calculating an equivalence premium, which is based on a realistic statistical basis. So, a realistic statistical basis means claim frequency, claim severity, means survival probabilities or mortality table, as you want. Then we add something. How we add something to the equivalence premium? There are two possibilities, the so-called implicit safety loading or explicit safety loading. When we refer to explicit safety loading, this means that we use a formula so that we add something to the equivalence premium. For example, the simplest choice could be take the equivalence premiums and increase it 5%, 10%. So this is a formula which means the equivalence premium plus 10% of the premium itself, or a more sophisticated formula which can relate the safety loading to the variance or to the standard deviation or to other quantities. Conversely, an implicit safety loading when we change the statistical basis. Typically in life insurance, in term insurance, providing a benefit in case of death, we use an old population table which contains the probability of dying higher than what we can expect in our portfolio, because our portfolio is to some extent a selected portfolio, so with a mortality which should be lower than the general one. So we increase the probability of dying, and in this way we insert an implicit safety loading in the premium calculation without adding an explicit term or using an explicit formula. There is, if you like, a reinterpretation in more more modern term, we can say that we use risk neutral or risk adjusted probabilities. This is a terminology used in finance. So instead of using the realistic probabilities, also called the natural or physical probabilities, or the best estimate probabilities, if you want, you use alternative probabilities, which leads to a higher premium level, to a higher amount of premium. These are called risk neutral probabilities, but I think it's just a matter of terminology, because there is no real adjustment process, but simply the insurer wants to add something to be on the safe side. So the idea of safety loading is exactly coinciding with that of profit margin, because the safety loading, in the sense, it is called a safety loading in the sense that if the experience is worse than expected, the probability of default is lower. The probability of portfolio default is lower if we increase the premium. If the experience is exactly as expected, that's a profit margin. So this is the expected profit. So profit margin, either profit margin or safety loading, the two terms denote exactly the same quantity, which is included in the premium level. Okay, so we can move to these three numerical examples. We refer to a medical expense reimbursement policy, age 50, duration 15.
with annual level premiums which are payable for the whole policy duration. Note that 50 means that the reserve is not very small, because there is an increase in level premium, in the natural premiums, also because the duration is 15, which means not too short. So we have natural premiums increasing from 50 to 60 to 65. 50 was not in the graphs, if I remember, because no, this is 50. Okay, 50, exactly. This is the amount of the reserve. So 200, but now we will compare to the annual benefit. So this is the behavior of the reserve we are addressing now when defining the indexing mechanism. Okay. So what can we learn, and what can we understand from this this table? Assume that there is an increment. First, read this column here, which means an increment in the reserve every year 5%. So you can interpret as a profit participation, a rather important profit participation. Sure, important if in terms of interest rate, clearly, is 5% more, or maybe coming from sickness profits or mortality profit, not in this case, in life insurance could be mortality profit, here just sickness in the sense that we experience a sickness much lower than expected, or we have, but here mainly is an interest rate higher than expected. So we have 5% credited each year to the reserve. So the insurance company each year is crediting 5% on the reserve. What is the result? We should see what about the incremental premium, clearly. And we assume here that the premium remains constant. So there is no increase in premium. What is the result? You know that JK, as we have seen, is a weighted average of these two rates, in any case. And this is the formula here. So you see that at the beginning of the story, first year, incrementing the reserve 5% means an increment in the benefits which is smaller than 1 per mille, because the reserve is not so much important in the process. Whereas there are many premiums to be paid which are not incremented. So the weight of the premiums is rather important. And so not incrementing the premium is important as it has a negative effect. So that the increase is less than 1 per mille in the first year. Again, incrementing the reserve 5% the second year is 1.7 per mille. So in any case, a very modest effect. The maximum you find here at the end. Why the maximum? Because here there is just one premium to be paid, so that the effect of non-incrementing the premium can be in practice disregarded. But clearly we have not 5%, we have just 1.3%, which in few words means that we cannot maintain an indexing mechanism simply thanks to increment in the reserve. This means that we need to increment the premiums. Of course, the problem is how much. It's difficult to ask an increment of premiums of 5%, for example, indexing just 4%. Because when the client sees that his premium or her premium rises 5%, would be pleased to see that also the benefits can be incremented at the same percentage. So in any case, we can conclude that just incrementing the reserve is not enough to maintain an indexing mechanism, even if the duration is rather important, 15 years, and so the reserve cannot be disregarded. Second table, much more interesting. Assume that the insurance company does not increment the reserve, so there is no increment, no profit participation here. no increment in the reserve. So 0%. Okay. Premium. And we want, conversely, we want to have the benefits increased each year 6%. So we can assume a huge inflation, for example, because 6% is a very important inflation. But we assume that there is an increase of 6%, maybe inflation, maybe increase in severity or in the frequency of claims, and there is no participation. How much is required in terms of premium increments? Clearly, more than 6%. Why? Because we know that this 6% is a weighted average of this and this. So it's a weighted average of zero and something which must be clearly greater than this, because otherwise this is not this would be not a weighted average between these two quantities. So clearly we have to increase the premiums more than we want to increase the benefits, but how much? Not so much, because premiums are important and the reserve is not important. So we see that increasing premium 6.1 here maintains exactly 6%. This may be not a very nice issue because the policyholder has to increase 6 or 6.6, and in any case the annual increment is just 6%. But in any case, much simpler to explain and to make this effective than this mechanism here, which is absolutely not effective. Because with this 5%, we do not get anything in practice via only participation mechanism. Okay, finally, the third one is simply a mixture in the sense that we maintain 6% here as our target. So we want to increase the benefit 6%, but there is a participation, so 4%. So the insurance company contributes to the increment in the actuarial value benefits, and this clearly lowers the increment in premium. If you compare here 6.1, 6.0, 6.2, 6.0. Clearly why? Because of the same story as previously. This must be a weighted average of this and this. As this is positive, this one, to be a weighted average, requires here a rate which is smaller than in the previous case. So just to say that even a modest participation mechanism can improve the situation. Of course, triggering, if the increment would be 6%, clearly we find here 6%, of course, because the three rates can be equal, starting from the basic formula, which is this one. Here, okay. If we increment 6%, we increment both the reserve and the future premium the same rate, we have this situation in which the three rates are equal at the same level. So it would be, I can't say the ideal situation because this requires an increment, but easy to understand and easy to communicate to the policy. Okay, so this is the remark and the concluding remark as regards this chapter. Sickness insurance policy, in particular temporary policy, I mean not lifelong policy, are not accumulation products. This is obvious. Also, lifelong policy indeed do not lead to a benefit at maturity, so there is no accumulation process. So that the mathematical reserve is small or at least not so important as in products which tend to accumulate something at maturity. So the mathematical reserve is small provided that the policy duration is not too long. Clearly the longer the policy duration, the more important is the reserve. But in any case, this does not change everything in our arrangement. So the conclusion, the only increment of the reserve cannot maintain the rise in the actuarial value of future benefits, what we saw in the first table, in which we had 5% and a bit more than nothing here, while conversely the rise in actuarial value of future benefit can be financed by a reasonable increment of future premiums only, which is reported, illustrated by Table 2. In Table 2, in which you find here 6%, and here, of course, more than 6%, but not a huge rate. Okay. Question, remarks? Sorry?
Which mix is then shown as the strategy? Depends on the market position.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. As far as, I don't think it's a secret, as far as regards what they are studying in Belgium, they tend to increase, they will tend, because this is still a project, to increase the premium rates more than the inflation, in the sense that they cannot stick to a participation mechanism in any case in line with inflation. And so they are ready to ask to the policyholders an increment in premiums higher than the increment in benefits. But if the idea is basically this one, if there is some increment in the reserve, the increment in the premium level is not huge compared to the increment in the benefits. Clearly, this is for 15 years, in this case, from 50 to 65. They are studying this, and they will try, but I have not yet any particular results, to extend to lifelong policies, in which clearly the increment of premium, clearly these increments, I stress this fact, are accumulated. I mean, the first year you have, for example, let's say in this case here, 6% increment in the actuarial value of benefits. In the second year, this is compound, in the sense that in the second year you have 6% on the incremented actuarial value benefit. Here you have this 6.1 is not just for the first premium, it's for all the premiums that you will pay from now, I mean time one, the end of the first year, to maturity. Then, if you want a second increment here, you have another increment, 6.2, which is added, or better multiplied, 1.06, etc., to the premiums already incremented. So if you take 1.06 or 1.07, more or less power 14, you find that the increase in premium is rather meaningful. But clearly also the increase in the benefit is rather important. If the increment in premium is higher, the situation is worsening, of course. So that the application to lifelong covers, I think, may be critical. Probably, they will. This is also studied by some Italian insurance company, and maybe also from others in Europe, at least. At some moment in time, this cannot be longer maintained. I mean that even if the inflation is, I don't say 6% because it's a huge inflation, but if the inflation is, let's say, 3%, maybe the increment is just one half of the inflation rate, so that it's easier to maintain or via increment the reserve and or increment in the premium. Another question. You say that this column here?
Yeah.
Oh, no matter.
But if it's medical inflation versus just financial inflation, and that's medical inflation is passed on to the policyholders in essence. And so then the question is actually, do you know, I don't know personally, but do you know what the difference is typically between the medical inflation and?
Oh, the general inflation.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you wouldn't.
No.
So what is the difference kind of? And then not be explained to the policyholders that listen, you're not exposed to inflation, you're exposed to inflation.
No, but as regards Belgium, as far as I can remember, they had in rather recent years and years. even decades, they have experienced medical inflation, which is more or less stepwise. So I mean, an inflation, general inflation increasing, or constant, but in terms of cumulated inflation, of course, if you have a constant rate, you have an exponential shape, of course. And as regards medical, they noticed a step. On average, in some years, they had much more medical, maybe to recover non-inflation in the previous years. So as regards medical inflation, but this, as we say, that is a later reference, so I cannot prove this. In some years, they can have here zero, for example, so no medical inflation, zero, zero, zero. Depends on what medical inflation is. It's a cost of surgery, cost of medicines, or cost of maybe diagnosis or various treatments. Really, it's composed. But on average, they notice this, so that they could have here for some years zero and then a jump. So clearly, you have to link the actuarial structure, of course, is the same. The implementing problems may be different. Clearly, if you refer to daily allowance, I mean for temporary disability or for hospitalization benefits, but in the sense not of hospitalization expenses, but simply benefits during the hospitalization period, you have here something which is regular. For example, with a 2% inflation constant or 1.5, you have something which is very regular. I repeat, the formula the same. The implementation clearly may cause more problems in case of strange jumps, because this would require an important jump in the premium, clearly not in the participation mechanism. Another idea is to set aside a reserve which is maintained by profit participation and used when there is a jump in inflation. So you do not increase benefits because benefits do not be increased if there is a zero inflation in general or zero inflation in medical expenses. But when there is a jump or when there is positive inflation, you can take money from the reserve and then use in order to give to assign a positive DB.
So then the driver is in fact the difference between inflation and medical inflation. That's what's driving. How to assign that difference to entirely to the policyholder, for example, as is done here, or split between strengthening the reserves versus.
A large part, in any case, charges to the policyholder.
Yeah.
In any case. This is not a driver, actually, in this sense. It is a driver if you want, but in monetary terms, the effect is rather modest.
The problem is that a policy in which there is a progressive increment in premiums can be more easily accepted than a policy in which there is a zero increment in premiums, and that at some point of time, very well, now you have to pay 15% more. Astonishing. But in this case, the reserve set aside with past profit participation can help. So if you say the driver is the different inflation, and we assume that one, and maybe likely to be the reality, is stepwise, then you should use some profit participation. Past the profit participation mechanism in order to lower the jumps in premiums. From a technical point of view, it's exactly the same. From the market point of view, clearly it's not the same. What is more, even if I am not sure that they will have success in implementing for a lifelong policy, because a lifelong, in any case, is much more complex. This is true for 15, it's true for 20. Clearly, lifelong policy has other problems which maybe are even more important, for example, the forecast regarding mortality, and also the estimation
of the costs in terms of hospitalization or medical expenses, because statistical data are absolutely scanty. In Italy we have hospital data, but hospital data are general data. And what about possible portfolio data, future portfolio experience? You know that reasonably the policyholder are to some extent selected. But this may be exactly interpreted in two different ways. What about the health status, and what about the propension, the propensity to access the and to ask for medical tests, for checks, and so on. Maybe this can increase the cost, whereas a lower claim frequency can contribute to decrease the cost. And this, I think, is the biggest problem over 70. Because so far in Europe, up to 70 was rather common to have insurance cover. In Germany, there are already lifelong. But clearly, the imports of data is one of the most dangerous issues. When you import data from one country to another, the first thing is the basis risk, of course, because you refer to a population which may be, to some extent, different from what is your portfolio. And so importing data is, in any case, a rather terrific issue, because you can make really strong mistakes. Okay, now I would like to address these other points, point five and point six, but as I said, just to provide some ideas, because here the mathematics gets more and more complex, so maybe boring to deal with too many formulas. But I think some ideas could be interesting. So, basic starting point. In several countries, we have many policies which provide 1 year cover. The insurer is not obliged to renew the policy, which means in case of too many claims, and in some cases in case of claim, the insurer could say no renewal. So you are no longer covered. What is better, no cover or higher premium? So higher in the sense of experience-based premium. This means that we have to move to another context in which rate-making is according to individual characteristics, according to, first, a priori classification, which is based on risk factors which cannot be observed at policy issue: age, current health conditions, profession, gender. As you can imagine, this question mark relates to Europe, where an old European directive.
But they don't gender in Europe anymore.
that's a nice remark, you know. Everything is unisex. No, but unfortunately, from the insurer point of view, this is not a joke. There is a directive of the European Union, dated, I don't remember, but many years ago, I think 19, no European remember, no, I don't remember. But what is worse, there is a decision, a sentence of the Supreme Court, European Court, who decided that no longer gender differentiation in insurance tariffs. And this means life annuities in particular, and health insurance as well. So gender is no longer is a risk factor, but is no longer a rating factor, because we are aware that risk depends on gender, of course. The expected lifetime is still 2, 3, 4, 5 years different from males to females, in favor of females, but this cannot be accounted for when pricing a life annuity or a health insurance product. There is another problem, which is still a European problem, which is even worse, because clearly this is true for pricing, but this is absolutely crazy and prohibited as regards reserving, because the new principle is that the calculation of the reserve must be on a best estimate basis. And of course, a best estimate basis requires gender differentiation. So this is really a very big question mark. And let's say, actually, this is a nightmare, because this can create problems like adverse selection. Clearly, the premiums will be some weighted, some average, some weighted average between male and female premiums, but the differentiation as regards pricing will be no longer possible next year, starting from the 21st of December this year, which according to Maya should be the end of the world. This is the end of gender discrimination in any case, even if we hope not the end of the world, of course. 21st December, the new regime, and in particular, really will be implemented on the 1st January. Anyway, here we still conserve the gender. But what is important, a second classification, which is no longer a priori, but is experience-based. So claim experience providing information in order to partially replace risk characteristics which are unobservable in a policy issue. So clearly there are individual characteristics which cannot be observed, like the particular future health status, the particular current health status, which cannot be completely observed apart from declaration, medical examination, and so on. So the idea of an experience-based classification, to some extent, is close to what already happens in car insurance, in automobile insurance, where we speak about merit rating system. Clearly, this is not a merit rating, because it's not a matter of merits, but clearly a matter of simply experience. One is more or less lucky and more or less healthy. So, what is the aim of this chapter? As I said already many times, I will not enter in the deep in depth and into details, but I would like to try to explain the basics of these two aspects. The first point is that we have to define an inference model, so a statistical inference model, and here in particular a Bayesian inference model, which fits the particular characteristics of sickness insurance and which leads to a straight experience rating model. What I mean by straight? I mean that premiums, according to the inference models, are directly related to the expected future number of claims, but expected conditional on observing past frequencies, on observing an individual story. This means an extremely complex model, because for any possible past story, I mean zero claim in the first year, one in the second, zero in the third, we have one premium. Then another story, with just one claim again, but not in the second year, but in the third year, we would find a different premium. So with two claims in past 10 years, if the two claims are the first and second year, after 10 years we would find a premium level. If the two claims are not in the first and the second, but in the fourth and in the fifth year, we would find a different premium. So really huge trees, a tree of possibilities which cannot be applied, clearly does not lead to a workable pricing system. So, second point, some practical rating system, which are, for example, the bonus-malus like in automobile insurance, or a no-claim discount. This in particular is implemented in UK, so that no-claim discount, the expression is rather self-explanatory, in the sense that in case of no claim for a shorter or longer period, the premium lowers, so gets to lower levels. So this is in any case an individual setting, so we again refer to one individual, X the aged policy issue, and the policy term, and this is the random number of claims between age X plus H, which is the subscript, and X plus H plus 1, so in 1 year. This is the accumulated number of claims up to time K, so the sum of these claims is the annual number of claims. Capital theta is what we call a random parameter in the probabilistic structure. I will explain immediately what is the meaning of this. And small theta is a generic outcome, a possible value of our parameter. So, hypothesis. If we assume a given value for this parameter, maybe the individual frequency, for example, the frequency of claims for Mr. John Smith, if we assume that this parameter has a value, we assume the numbers are independent. And the probability distribution of the generic number is a Poisson distribution, which is a distribution rather common in general insurance, for example, in automobile insurance, in third-party liability insurance. But the parameter is not simply theta, but is theta multiplied this. If you remember, this is the aging parameter. So we assume that something for each individual is given, even if unknown. We do not know the overall frequency independent of age. But we have a scale which specifies the effect of aging, so that our distribution is Poisson with these parameters, theta times the aging parameter. And this is the expression for the probability distribution. This is the expected value conditional on, exactly you see that this t times theta expresses the expected number of claims at age x plus h. X plus h, between x plus h and x plus h plus 1. And this clearly, these will be increasing, expressing the age effect. Then we have to attribute a probability distribution, because we do not know for each individual. So moving from the individual to the group, insured group, we assume that this has a gamma distribution with positive parameters, alpha, beta, with this expression, and this is the expected value, the consequent expected value of theta, and the variance of the parameter theta. Now a lot of formula, but I can skip all these all these steps in the formula. I simply stress what is the meaning of the quantities we are calculating. This is the probability of n claims at age x plus 1. When I say age x plus 1, I mean between between x plus h and x plus h plus 1. And then we can find this, which we can check is a negative binomial, etc. And then we find that the unconditional expected value, remember here, this expected value, if we assume a particular value for the parameter theta, so if you assume that the particular individual has this parameter, then we can move from this, which is conditional on this, to this one, which is no longer conditional, is in the group, given the probability distribution of the parameter. So we find the expected value of this parameter times the aging factor with this variance, etc. So given this, we can find also the probability distribution of the accumulated number. Remember that this one is the accumulated number from the policy issue to time k. And this is Poisson, which has L parameter theta times the sum of the aging parameters. And then we can find the unconditional distribution, which is more and more complex. But in any case, this is just a matter of performing some algebra, some steps. What about the inference procedure? I think here it's important to stress the meaning more than the formula. Assume a claim record. This means that we are at a given time k, let's say after 5 years, and we have observed NX claims the first year, NX plus 1 the second, up to NX plus 4 the preceding, the last year before now. So that we can calculate the posterior distribution of the parameter capital theta. This means that we can move from our initial gamma, which is this one, to another distribution, which can be proved is of the same type, the same type of distribution, but with an update in the parameters. So no longer alpha, beta, but parameters which change, and actually we find here a gamma with alpha plus, and this is the total number of claims experienced so far, and beta plus the total value of the aging factors from age x to age x plus k minus 1. So what can we do? We can update the expected value of the parameter. Remember that here the expected value of the parameter was alpha over beta, simply. And now we can calculate a new value in the sense that this is the expected value of the parameter for any individual in the group who has experienced this sequence of number of claims. So is individual in the sense that this calculation is related to this experience. And x the first year, and x plus 1 the second, and x plus k minus 1 in the last year. And we adjust the expected value according to this formula. So you see that clearly. This here does not depend on the particular record, because these are the aging factor, and we have in any case to sum the aging factor. The numerator, conversely, does depend on the experience. So the worse the experience, I mean the higher the numbers, and in particular the higher the total amount, the total number of claims, the higher will be the expected value. So this is the effect of the experience. If you observe more number of claims, higher number of claims, you will obtain a higher expected value for the individual, and I mean for any individual who experienced exactly the same, not necessarily sequence, but the same total number of claims, which means that the total number is, as called in statistics, a sufficient statistics. It contains the information we need to make the updating. So we can find the unconditional distribution of the number of claims in a future year. So we are here point of time k. For any j greater or equal k, I mean current or future, we can calculate the expected number of claims according to these observed record, to these claims. And this is our aging factor times, if you remember, the expected value of capital theta, which now is this one, updated according to the observed claims. Here, just three examples to conclude the first part. Assume this one, which is the one already used in the previous part, so an exponential shape for the number of claims. We find in particular these expected value, age 40, 41, 42, 45. I marked this one to compare with the future results. So 0.144 is the expected number of claims, I mean 14%. Age 45, when, if we do not allow for any experience. So initially, at the policy issue, we can say just this fact here, because we just allow for the age, maybe for the gender, but not explicitly here. So just allowing for the age, we found this result. Now, what about possible experience record? We will see in a moment. Here we first have to calculate the aging factors, and to calculate the aging factor, for example, we can define in this way, assuming Y prime 20, so this is a standardization with respect to the what may be the lowest age at entry, in many cases 20 is the minimum age at entry, and then we find this table of aging factors. But this is a matter of relative numbers, because we could refer to 40, for example, and referring here to 40, we find here numbers more than one, of course, and here we find here one, and then numbers higher than one, but it's just a matter of scale, not a matter of product, so no particular importance. So here, if you assume this parameter for the gamma distribution, age at policy issue 40, we find these credibility factors, I didn't mention, but what is more important, we find these values for N45. So N45 conditional on a claim record. This means here, if we do not observe, if we have no claim in between 40 and 44, no claim, sum equals zero, we have 0.09 as a expected value that we can compare to our 0.44. This is prior, before any specific claim record information. Clearly, no claim at much lower expected value. One claim, even higher, already higher, 1.717, because the claim frequency is low. So observing one claim immediately worsens the situation. And so the expected number is higher than previously. Observing six, of course, this gets huge. So 0.582 instead of here, that you find 0.144. So what to do with this? Question.
This is one person.
This is one person whose story in terms of claims is represented formally by N40, N44, so 5 years, and as regards the inference mechanism, what is needed is just the sum. Because if you look at the previous formula, you find that here, to update the expected number, you need to know the sum of n, and not necessarily each n. Okay, so the cumulative number. Okay, and clearly, where this number is located as regards the age, because clearly, one claim in 5 years is not so bad if you have a person aged 90, clearly, where you have high T, but it's much worse if you have a person aged 25, in which case just one claim can worsen a lot the expected value. That's okay? As regards individual, is it individual or not? The answer is yes, but clearly all individuals who has the same total number of claims are treated in the same way. So the inference mechanism works in the same way for all individuals who experience the total number of claims at the same age ranges, clearly. So if you state the age ranges and if you state the total number of claims observed, then all individuals are equal. So it's individual, but not different individual from individual. Okay. So,
we had these numbers here, and we commented actually expected number of claims according to claim experience. My last comment was what to do with this mechanism here. Directly nothing. Directly nothing, because you can imagine that after one year, how many different premiums we could have. One premium for zero claim in the first year, another premium for one claim, another premium for two claims, another premium for three claims, etc. Then, second year, how many premiums?
one premium for 0 plus 0 equals 0, another premium for 0 plus 1 or 1 plus 0, which is the same, but already 2, and so on. For any possible value of the total number of claims, we should have a different premium at any point in time. So this means a tree which is a monster, clearly, and so not absolutely not workable. So we have to define something which is some alternative. Here you see a premium. This is the premium, the annual premium. We already was noted with PXM, just to shorten P. This is the annual level premium if no experience rating is adopted. For example, for a medical expense insurance, assuming this, we have this one, etc. In presence of experience rating, I already commented, in principle, in every year, different premiums should be determined and charged according to each individual claim record, even though simply in terms of sum of number of claims. To obtain applicable premium system, we have to state times at which premium adjustment may occur and the number of different premiums at each adjustment time. How many different premiums we want after 5 years, 10 years, and so on. And then relationships between claim experience and adjusted premiums. So the idea is to adopt the inference mechanism, but not to implement directly, but in a rather smooth way, smooth style, if you want, so to lower both the number of adjustments as regards time and the number of level premiums at each point in time. So here I do not enter into details, we have left less than half an hour, but I want to simply illustrate. This is the idea of an experience-based rating system, the simplest possible. You start the Greek letter nu denotes the node. So this is the node 1 in which you have P1 as the initial premium. So you calculate a level premium, but this level premium is not for the whole policy duration. You can check if you want from the formula. I don't know if you have the slides, the copy of the slides. No, not available. But I think you can put on some website. But this calculation, the P1, is the level premium, one because it refers to the node 1, but this premium is an equivalence premium from 0 to K. So it's useless to calculate a premium from 0 to M, because you already know that at time K you will change the premium. Maybe you will keep the premium. But in any case, you have to perform another calculation to apply a premium which may be different from the former one. So, time K, you look at the accumulated number of claims up to time K. In case of 0, you apply a premium P2. In case of greater than 1, one or more premiums, a different premium P3. What about the relation? Still to be stated. Clearly, what we can say is that this premium will be sure lower than this one, because this is a good experience, no claim. This is a more or less bad experience, but you understand here that we can have one claim, two claims, three claims, so a very wide set of possibilities, and this premium should allow for all possibilities here, for all premium stories. Clearly, the number here depends also on the length of the interval. If this is just 2 years, it's difficult to have an experience number larger than 3 or 4. If we have here 10 years, we can have also a higher number. This is a more complex, 2 adjustment times, and so this means that we start from a P1, premium P1, which must be kept from 0 to K1, so a level premium, sure not to change here, then 2 different levels, as previously the case of 0 claim and greater or equal 1, and then you can move from this to the other, clearly. You cannot go back, because if you have here observed more than 1, you cannot go here, which is 0, so this is the best story with 0 claim. This is a bit worsening, and this is worsening still, improving improving in the sense that the relative frequency is lowering, maybe here is greater or equal 1, here maybe still exactly equal 1, etc. So you see here the calculation of premium, but as I said, I do not enter into details. Just to remark that in each node, the premium is a level premium for the interval from the node to the next node, or possible for the interval from the node to the maturity, to the end of the policy. Some particular rating system, just some comments about the possibilities. Here we have to define premiums bar P, which are no longer the premiums which are directly suggested by the inference mechanism, but are in some way stated or constrained or linked, etc. Clearly, this is the equation we have to fulfill the equivalence principle, so that all premiums bar P nu, which means the premium for the node nu, if we take the actuarial value of all premiums times the probability of applying the premium itself, because here we are not sure that the premium level will be applied if we enter in that node, this actuarial value must be equal to the actuarial value of benefits as calculated at the beginning of the story. So clearly a particular solution is given by the former premiums, which are not adjusted only as regards the numbers. So we have restricted the number of premiums for each node. I don't enter here into details, I show you some example. This is the no claim discount system, and the example here is with just one adjustment time, in which you see that we start from node 1 with a premium bar P1, which is valid to be kept from 1 to a time k, maybe 3 or 5. And then we have two premiums. Here the premiums bar P2 is the premiums bar P1 reduced. This is a factor. For example, we say that in case of no claim, we impose that this premium must be equal to 80% of the first one, so a discount of 20%. Okay? So this is the no claim discount. Clearly, P3 in this case is equal to P1. Why? Because in this case there is one or more claim. Of course, this premium is kept rather high at the beginning of the story and remains the same whatever the number of claims. Just in case of no claim, you have a discount. This is the simplest no discount system we can imagine. Another example with two adjustment time here, you keep the same level here, you keep the same level here, you have a first decrease here, F2, because we are in the node 2, so you decrease because no claim, and here you have a more important decrease because this n equals 0 is much more important than this one. Here we have time from 0 to K1 and 0 claim, let's say, for 5 years. Here 0 claim from 0 to K2, which can mean 0 claims in 10 years. And so a better situation, a better improvement in the sense that we experience no claim in a longer interval. So maybe this could be, for example, 80%, this could be 70%, so a further lowering of the premiums. Bonus-malus system, of course, are arranged so that we have different levels of premium according to the experience. So, for example, we can lower the premium, F2 lower than 1, smaller than 1, in case of no claim. We can, for example, keep the premium in case of just one claim, and we can worsen, we can uplift the premium in case of two claims, and of course, even more in case of three or more claims. This is a very dangerous, I think it's no longer used, but in some countries was used also in motor car insurance,
the so-called advanced discount system, which can also be defined as a solution, so can be interpreted in the framework of our model. But this means that we calculate an equilibrium premium, which is bar P. So an equilibrium premium, which should be fulfilled, which must fulfill the equivalence principle. And we reduce the premium here, so this is a discount. We keep the discount in case of no claim, know that this premium is F bar P, and this premium is still F bar P. So immediately, when the policy is written, we have a premium which is discounted, advanced discount indeed. This premium is kept in case of no claim, whereas the premium is increased, G greater than 1, in case of claim. The problem is that, as can be easily proved, the insurance company can be here not fully financed. I mean that in case of lapse of the policyholder, the insurer is in a credit position. And so if there is a lapse, why? Because, for example, an increase in premium judged too high by the policyholder has the right to lapse the contract and should pay the amount, but I think it's a real practical problem to make the policyholders paying his or her debt, so that this premium, this arrangement should be avoided in the sense that it's against the logic of pre-funding the insurance benefits. Okay, there are several numerical examples, but as I mentioned, I skip just because the purple or 10-11 example. So, as I said, just some basic ideas. This is based on a paper I wrote with my colleague Anna Maria and published in 2002 on the Belgian Actuarial Bulletin, which does not exist any longer, but because many European actuarial journals has stopped the publication and entered the European Actuarial Journal. But in any case, the paper is still available online on the website of the Belgian Aquaria Bulletin. So this is a rather complex issue. So indeed, if you check the number of slides, you find that there are something like 40 slides to deal with these problems. And of course, no possibility of entering the details. So just moving throughout the slides, I want to stress some basic idea. The problem is actually a problem, I think, of current interest, as I mentioned in the case of Belgian insurer, Italian insurer, maybe also other European insurer, to define lifelong covers, which clearly are the top as regards the quality under the perspective of the policyholder of the insurer, providing sickness benefit, for example, reimbursement of medical expenses. What are the causes of risk which affect lifelong sickness covers? Clearly, random number of claims in any given insured period, random amount medical expenses refunded relating to each claim. But as regards A and B, these are common to all covers in general insurance, of course. What in particular concerns lifelong sickness cover is the scarcity of data, as I already mentioned. In most countries, data stop at 70, 75. We have to resort not to insurance data, but to public data, to national data, and clearly the quality of data is not guaranteed, but also the type of population referred to can be rather different from the population in an insured portfolio. And even worse if we import data from other countries. Cause C, random lifetime of the insured. Clearly, the random lifetime of the insured must be allowed for
also in a short-term policy. Of course, we say that the sickness benefits provide our benefit in case of life, in case of sickness and life as well, of course. To be sick, one must be alive. So that we need to account in any case for the mortality table or for a life table. But the problem is that if we address duration from, let's say, 40 to 70, the probability of being alive at 70 is very high nowadays. So it's not really a problem of longevity risk. Clearly, if we deal with lifelong covers, the problem is the scenario is completely different, because see biometric risk and in particular longevity risk. So this has an impact which is strictly related to the premium system adopted. I think this is the most important issue, and to some extent is the raison d'etre of our work in that paper. I want to focus on this one. Single premium at retirement ages. We consider these premium systems. Single premium at retirement age, so single premium, which means that all expected costs are met at policy. So one single premium cash. Second arrangement, sequence of level premiums, maybe stepwise or not. Indeed, in the paper we consider level premiums, so an arrangement in which against a sequence of natural premiums which are increasing, we define a level premium which is constant level, indeed, throughout the policy duration. I don't know if here you use the terms level premium or constant premium. Level premiums. It's level, not a con. No, it's very English indeed, because in many languages we say, for example, in Italian, we say premi costanti, which is constant premium. To be honest, I prefer level because it gives also the idea that we are leveling against something that is increasing. So the term level is effective indeed. So level premium, okay. So a sequence of level premiums may be lifelong, and indeed what we considered is a lifelong sequence. A sequence of natural premiums, which means, if you think to the first slides, a sequence of premiums, each one, or risk premium, if you want, each one meets exactly the expected cost related to the year at the beginning of which the premium itself is cashed. Okay? So each premium meets the cost of the related year. Then, mixtures of one and two, which means an upfront premium, not single, because but like a single premium. The upfront premium, I mean, paid at the policy issue, plus a sequence of level premiums, a mixture of one and three, which means an upfront premium instead of a single premium, plus a sequence of premiums proportional to natural premiums. Proportional, really not equal, because something has been already paid here. So if we pay an upfront premium, we have to pay something which is proportional to what should meet exactly the cost year by year. So the only comments we can make here is to look at some characteristics of these possible arrangements. In particular, system one, policyholder point of view, is it interesting or not? It is interesting if a lump sum is available at retirement. Maybe a lump sum at maturity of some policy at the end of an accumulation period, so that part of the amount available is annuitized, a part is used to draw down the post-retirement income, and a part can be used, but a meaningful part, because clearly this single premium is not a poor premium. Rather important premium, because it has to cover from 65 to maybe 90, 95, etc. But can be interesting in this case. What about the insurer's point of view? I think this is the worst arrangement, because it's true that the insurer immediately cash money and can invest, but the longevity risk is at the top, because this premium implies a forecast not only of the expected annual cost as regards frequency, severity, etc., but as regards the remaining lifetime of the individual. So the aggregate, in particular longevity risk, clearly even the individual, the idiosyncratic risk, but that's not a big problem, as I mentioned, because that can be diversified thanks to a good size of the pool, or thanks to a reinsurance treaty, to the insurance transfer. But as regards the aggregate longevity risk, that's another story. And the risk is very difficult to diversify. So system three, I mean, sequence of natural premiums. Policyholder point of view, not so good, maybe rather bad. Why? You know, from the first pictures in these slides, dramatic increase of premiums at very old ages, particularly if we think that an exponential function provides a good fitting of the annual costs, we find a tremendously increasing sequence of natural premium. Insurer point of view, the best. The best, because in practice there is no longevity risk. Each premium is paid at the beginning given year, provided that the insured is alive at that point of time. And each premium has to cover exactly the cost of that year. What about the following years? No matter. If the insured will be alive, the insured will pay the future premiums. So the lowest risk longevity related to longevity. In practice, it's almost a ridiculous risk, because the risk is limited year per year. So at very high ages, of course, the risk is more important, because the probability of being alive at the end of the year is not so high, but in any case, this affects a random fluctuation or idiosyncratic risk. So system four, what about this? Mixtures of one and two, upfront premium plus sequence of level premiums. It's not an original idea, because it's applied. Maybe interesting, some midpoint, rather interesting. Actually, this is adopted, in US at least, by the continuous care retirement communities to provide long-term care benefit as a service. So providing care, providing assistance, home, etc. In the continuous care retirement communities, there is an advance fee, which corresponds to our upfront premium, so a fee paid when entering the community, and then a sequence of periodic fees, which can be clearly compared to the periodic premiums, possibly adjusted for inflation, and this is very interesting, because here there is also the indexing mechanism, but in principle level, so a level fee, so like a level premium, which however can be adjusted because of inflation, and so because of increasing costs in maintaining the communities. So system five is not commented here. Why? Because the interest in these systems depends on the balance, on the balancing between the upfront premium and the sequence of premium proportional. Because in any case, premiums proportional to natural premiums have this important dramatic increase. So even if we have premiums which are, let's say, 50% of natural premiums, these are 50% dramatic, but in any case, there is a dramatic increase at the oldest ages. Conversely, if the balancing between the upfront and the sequence of premiums, maybe here 80% and the 20% remaining here, there is again the drawback of this one.
which from the insurer's point of view means a very high longevity risk, because the upfront premium has to be calculated according to some mortality table projection. So here again there are the main aspects of mortality trends, but as previously mentioned, I would like to stop here, simply showing you the logic we have followed, apart from the mortality model we have adopted. We have allowed, as you see here, for both the process risk, which is to quantify the idiosyncratic risk, I mean the individual longevity risk, and the aggregate longevity risk, the uncertainty risk, we call it here uncertainty in the sense that it comes from the uncertainty in the future mortality representation. And what was the driving issue is to define, you can see here, I do not enter into details here, but a loss function, which is a function, loss function, I mean the net result, the random present value of the result, which is a function of alpha, which is the percentage, the share of upfront premium compared to the remaining. And as you can see from the table, this alpha, the lower is alpha, I mean, no, this is, no, sorry, if one we have the totally upfront premium, the risk, the loss is higher when we have upfront premium, whereas it's much lower if we have not upfront premium, but or natural premiums, or in any case, level premiums. So the solution here, we could find, an arrangement, is clearly to charge the premium, so that in order to keep the probability of loss relatively low, not too high, we have defined a scheme in order to calculate this alpha, which is this lambda, which is the loading percentage. This simply is, as I mentioned, an explicit safety loading, in the sense that the premium depends on the alpha, which is the share between the share between the upfront premium and the periodic premiums, and according to alpha we have a smaller or higher lambda, so a smaller or higher increase in the level premium in order to face the longevity risk. Clearly longevity risk cannot be avoided, it exists by itself, but the problem is to find enough funds in order to be able to cover the possibility of very, very high payments in case of very, very long life expectancy experienced in the population. Okay, I think that's... Four minutes in advance. But of course, as I mentioned, it's not the case to enter into details. I hope to have been able at least to give some ideas about the problems which to some extent are dynamic aspects of health insurance, in the sense that the usual arrangement, the usual actuarial arrangement in health insurance is a static perspective. So we have an information, both aggregate and individual, I mean as regards the portfolio and the single insured person. In life insurance, as regards the scenario, we are already used to adopt a dynamic perspective, so to project mortality tables, to allow for the uncertainty in future scenarios, etc. In health insurance, clearly this was not a need, as long as insurance covers with duration of 1 year or 5 years or 10 years were usual and to some extent the only offered by the insurance company. As we move to lifelong or in any case a long-term cover, this is a new need, both in an individual sense, what about the experience, which clearly is not a problem in life insurance, because in life insurance one is or alive or not, and so there is no particular experience. In life insurance there is the global, the scenario experience.
Here there is the scenario experience as regards mortality to be accounted for, but also the particular individual experience, which can suggest to some extent premium adjustments according to mechanisms which are statistically based on an inference mechanism which is very sound, the Bayesian one, but which would lead to a huge number of premiums so that cannot be directly applied, whereas what we can apply is to some extent a smoothing on the system we have. We can construct via Bayesian inference, and we can apply something which is smoother and also more easily to communicate and to understand. I thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Amano, for a very comprehensive and somewhat detailed coverage there. We will ask the Institute to make the slides available so you can have a closer look at that. And thank you all for coming along, and hopefully you've benefited somehow from the presentation. And thank you very much, and have a good evening.